Get in on the discussion. 617-779-0985. The Sports Hub Hockey Show. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Welcome in to another edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers coming to you from our Town Fair Tire Studios. A rare Saturday off for the Bruins, who have a Super Bowl Sunday matchup against Washington planned for tomorrow afternoon. A really nice way to fill that kind of void early on a Super Bowl Sunday for everybody.
Well, as long as we make it back in time.
Right. Well, get everybody out of there, get dressed quickly.
Yeah. And oh,
get
no, to the plane. No whistles. Let's go.
We come back here after, you know, last Saturday we were here in the midst of the All-Star break and the bye week and all of that. Couple of games under the belt for the Bruins. Not the results that they were hoping for. And Bruce Cassidy, never shy in giving us his thoughts, really wasn't shy after the game on Thursday. Not happy with, in particular, the way that his defense is playing, but the team as a whole, really. And, you know, with one win in the last six games, two wins in the last eight games for this team, they've gotten some points in overtimes and shootouts, so it hasn't been as bad as it could be. But He is definitely not happy with where this team is right now. And look, we've seen this before out of Bruce. As I said, he's not shy about telling us how he feels. And that seems to resonate around that room when he does this. So I'm really interested to see what kind of reaction he's going to get after his comments the other night.
Well, you've got two very different efforts. The Bruins probably deserve better against the Winnipeg Jets. They were the better team. Connor Hellebuck was terrific, especially in the first period. In that second game against the Philadelphia Flyers, the Flyers were probably the better team for two of the three periods. But in both of those games, you had a lead starting the third period, unable to pick up 2 points in the game. In both of those games, you also had self-inflicted wounds. For the Bruins on Tuesday, two gaffes early in the third period. Connor scores twice. Patrice Bergeron comes up with a heroic game tire. You lose the game in extra time. But that's been the theme here in the first two games. And for the Bruins, I think what Bruce Cassidy was talking about, and he was asked very directly about Zdeno Chara, about the way the team is playing defensively. They've strayed from their identity a little bit in the way that they defend. And because of that, it's become costly.
Well, there's a lot of mistakes made at critical times right now, right? I mean, just look at that game, you know, against Winnipeg, and they've got the lead. You know, if you want to say they're in control, okay, you know, but third period, you go for a line change, and regardless of what happens, so, you know, you're on the ice, and you're trying to match lines. You see Shifley Wheeler, or at least you see Wheeler's line come out on the ice. Okay, I got to get a change. Now, whether Grizzlick was getting called to the bench or whether he was initiating it himself, I don't know. But you can see him signaling to the bench, you know, I'm coming. Mm-hmm. It was the wrong time for it. Now, like I said, when you're in that situation, you know, you want to make sure that you try to get the right line on the ice, especially when you're at home ice. You try to dictate the line changes. You try to get the matchups, and you see that top line come out. Okay, I got to get off. You know, it was the wrong time. But like I said, I'm not putting it all on Grizzly because maybe somebody was calling for him to get off at that specific time.
Right.
So it's not cut and dry. Like, oh, why does Grizzly go to the bench there? So, you know, there's a lot of things that might come into play, and, you know, they're not going to tell you what happened there. But bottom line is, when you see them with control of the puck, you can't come off there. And Connor splits them, and he ends up going on the breakaway. Now, the other night, you know, I watched that play again. I think McAvoy does everything right there. I have no problem with what McAvoy did late in the first period. He missed the net, but he's going for a corner, you know, and he's got some bodies there in front. So he's going for the top short side corner, and he missed the net. But Chara's got to rotate back. That's on Chara. He's got to rotate back. He's got to, and you know the time on the clock. McAvoy sees the puck coming up the boards. He stays in. He keeps the puck in the zone. He attacks the net. Philly was flying. They were flying the zone. They got, you know, McAvoy did what he was supposed to do other than hit the net. I get that. But you know, Chara's got to rotate back there. That's you know, he had a rough first period the other night. And he had four shifts in the second period. He played a lot more in the third, and he played well in the third. But, you know, that's going to happen once in a while. And it's, hey, he's not immune to some criticism. And, you know, I thought he was at fault on that first goal.
And I think in the bigger picture, some of the problems that you're seeing from the Bruins in the goals that they're allowing at some of these key times have come from the decisions that they've made both positionally and where they put the puck at the offensive end.
I mean, as you said, look, Char is not immune to criticism, and when he makes a mistake, it's going
to... I've got so much respect for what this guy has been able to do throughout his career, and I mean, you know, I don't know if he's a Hall of Famer. Probably is. And what he's done and what he continues to do is really, I mean, it's unbelievable. It's fantastic that he's been able to accomplish what he's accomplished and be where he is right now and still playing at a high level as a you know, one of the top defenders. But he had a rough period. It started right from the first shift. He tried to make a D-to-D pass. He didn't connect on that, and you know, it didn't go well from there. And so, you know, I think to put that blame on McAvoy for making that attempt, he had a good read, kept the puck in, attacked the net. You're supposed to do that, you know, and your partner's got to have your back there and rotate back and make sure nobody gets behind you.
That said,
especially with less than a minute to go in the first period.
No question. That said, you know, pointed comments, again, as I said, nothing new for this coach, but in particular going after the defense and then, you know, kind of singling out Chara and saying, like, he's got to make, you know, these other guys understand. He's got to make sure that Charlie's on board. He's the captain of the team. Is he, you know, is that something that resonates down through the room? That almost like, you know, to put it in the Super Bowl perspective, we hear Belichick is as hard on Brady as anyone. Is that, look, if I can criticize the captain like this, then nobody's off.
If you're the coach and you go in and you criticize the fourth line guys or the sixth or seventh defenseman every time, it's going to fall on deaf ears. Not deaf ears, but it's, you know, no one's going to take, guys aren't going to take notice as much. Mm-hmm. You go in and criticize your captain, you go in or criticize him out in the open, criticize your captain, they better take notice. They better take notice, I think it does resonate with the rest of the team when that happens. I think the only guy now that has not taken any criticism, and rightfully so, is Bergeron. Right? I can't ever remember him getting criticized publicly. Everybody else has been criticized publicly, and you know, and now you throw Chara in the mix and, you know, say that he has to be better, or whatever the words were from Bruce Cassidy. Yeah, I think other guys do definitely take notice. And I think it should have a positive effect.
Well, the other part of it too is when I initially hear the comments the other night, I say, okay, yes. Have there been mistakes defensively? No question. I mean, you just illustrated one perfectly. But I also look at it and say, you gave up two goals in 60 minutes. You know, your offense.
Yeah, your goalie was good.
Your.
Really good.
Yeah,
Ryan, he made a lot of key saves.
They gave up. How many odd man rushes they give up against Philadelphia?
No question.
No, that's you got. I mean, that's where the problem is. I mean, when we look at the rest of the game, you know, the decision making with and without the puck, whether it's a forward trying to force a pass in there or whether it's the D jumping up when he shouldn't jump up, that was the major issue in that particular game, in that specific game against Philadelphia, how many odd man rushes they gave up in that game. And That can't happen. It can't happen if you're going to be a good team, and you're not going to give up just two goals in 60 minutes if you give up that many odd man rushes on a normal,
understandable,
on a regular basis.
But your goaltender keeps you in that game, gives up two goals. Shouldn't you win that game?
I mean, yeah, well,
shouldn't you win that? If you give up two goals in 60 minutes, you should win more often than not.
We've been talking about the 5-on-5 play for a while now, and it's still an issue, and getting the secondary scoring is still an issue. Every goal that's been scored in the two games since they've been back from break has been from the top line. All right?
And Thursday night, you know, you had some jump from Jake DeBrusk in that second line with David Krejci in that game against the Jets.
Tuesday night.
But the game against the Philadelphia Flyers, it was the top line and everybody else was
pretty quiet. Perfect example of it is they switched up. They took Solaric off that second line with Krejci, and they put Hine in there in the third period, or at least for some shifts, and he had the game on a stick. I mean, Krejci, nice pass from DeBrusk to Krejci. Krejci gets Hart down and out. Hart's flailing, coming across. And Krejci makes the pass to Heinen. Heinen must have he had a tough time going to the bench after that one and digesting that one. That puck was on his stick, and he had an open net. There was one defenseman that was coming across on one knee, but that puck's in the back of the net if he handles the pass. And that's been his season. I think you said it, Judd, at the time. You know, that's been his season. That puck's got to be finished. It's a great passing play. It's right there. He's in the slot. He's wide open. He's got a wide open net. And the puck, you know, bounces off of his stick for whatever reason.
We start there this morning, 617-779-0985. We can take your calls on the Bruins week throughout. And obviously the trade deadline approaches ever nearer. And it has, you know, with the comments the other day about the defense, there's a lot to digest. So we'll get to more of your calls, or all of your calls, coming up next. It's Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers, and the Sports Hub Hockey Show here on a Saturday morning.
Press the right hand set. Let's go!
The Sports Hub Hockey Show. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers here in the Town Fair Tire Studios. 617-779-0985. Coming up later this hour, we're going to give you a chance to win some tickets to see the Bruins and Islanders coming up at the Garden. Let's grab some calls here. Maria in Watertown will get us started this morning. Good morning, Maria.
Hi, good morning, guys. How are you?
Good.
Just to piggyback on what you gentlemen were saying is I've been very disappointed and very frustrated to see what's happened coming out of a week-long break for this Bruins team. To me, that game against the Flyers the other night, they looked listless and, you know, uninspired and almost skating with no sense of urgency, and that is very, very troubling to me. In addition to Zdeno Chara looking a little bit old and tired, I thought John Moore had a rough game too, and I don't know what's happened to that young man, because, you know, he was playing very quietly, steadily, solid, and all of a sudden he seems to have diminished his play. The other thing is, this is the same repeating theme all season long, in that we need secondary scoring. And at this point, I am ready to just say, look, if you're committed to keeping David Krejci on this team, which it appears that they are, go out and get him someone to play with him. Because honestly, guys, I don't see the future of this team in Danton Heinen and the JFKs. With all due respect to their efforts, I just don't see it. And it's not going to get you far in the playoffs if you can't score. Just wanted to hear your thoughts on that. Thanks for the time.
I appreciate the call, Maria. Let's start defensively, because that's where we started the show. She brought up John Moore's name. Obviously, with, you know, we talked about this last week. With everybody healthy, it, you know, there becomes some more competition, and who's going to be in, who's going to be out. You know, I know we've seen some questionable play out of John Moore lately. Is this one of those things where he's, it seems like he's kind of in his own head at this point, that, you know, maybe some, you know, you start struggling a little bit and then it just kind of snowballs on him? Is this something larger? What are you guys seeing out of him right now?
I think John Moore is a good pro, and I think that they're still trying to find the right defensive partner for him. And thinking back to that game, and he played over 20 minutes against the Philadelphia Flyers, it was the one glaring error where he has a shot blocked, and I think what upset the coaching staff was that they work on this play all the time. It leads ultimately to the penalty shot that Tuukka Rask stops. But he was right back on the ice on the very next shift. So Kevin Dean, who controls the defense, he put him right back out there. And for the most part, I thought he was effective, but they're trying to find where does he exactly fit for you. And one of the things that we're going to have to watch is, okay, what are the deep pairs going to look like here at practice heading into tomorrow's game against the Washington Capitals?
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with him in that game. I mean, I didn't like that play, obviously, where you know you get the shot blocked out high, and now you end up getting the stick in there and taking the penalty shot. But he said, so I've been this guy before. You know, you feel like you're playing all right, and then numbers force you out of the lineup. And he missed the first time it happened. He missed three games. I think it was three. He got back in, and he did not play well.
Right.
He did not play well. And him and Kevin Miller had a rough time in the second period, and specifically him, he had a rough time in the second period. And this is going back a few weeks now. And then he sits out again for a couple of games, plus the break, the 9-day break. Now he gets back in the lineup. And like I said, I thought he handled it better this time than he did last time. He made that mistake that led to the penalty shot. I get that. But other than that, I thought he was okay. I thought he was fine. So it's a good problem to have if you're the Bruins and Bruce Cassidy. You want this many defensemen. You're going to need this many defensemen. But unfortunately, somebody's going to have to sit because of it. And, you know, I like Matt Grizzlick in the lineup. I think he brings a lot to the lineup, so it's tough to see him out of it. And we had this call last week, Ryan, where he said, okay, you know, why not just rotate defensemen in and out? You know, so, and I'm not adverse to that right now. You know,
rather than have one guy sitting out three or four games,
yeah,
like have each guy sit out one game here and there.
You've got a week coming up where, okay, they play Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Saturday, Sunday. You know, five games in 8 days. So why is it a problem to sit, you know, different guys? You know, there's certain guys I want in there. I want playing every day, all the time, because, you know, they've got to get their reps. And, you know, I throw McAvoy into that category. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to get him playing, because he's missed some time because of injury. But, you know, you can sit some other guys based on the schedule and based on the amount of games. And who knows, maybe somebody gets hurt tomorrow and it answers your question for you. But it makes a decision easy, I should say. But right now, with everybody healthy, I'm not adverse to sitting some guys at different nights, and especially a back-to-back game. You know, and I said it last week. You got a 41-year-old defenseman, sit him out a game. But you got to balance it with needing points. So that's the problem.
I mean, you're
right
not
now.
Exactly, you know,
no, you're
actually racking
right
up
now,
points right
so
now, and you're not in a
two wins in
a
your
safe
last
spot.
Eight games.
Yeah.
So you've got to find ways to win first, and then but you got to balance it with making sure guys are as fresh as possible when the time comes.
Mark, you're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
I just got to say the Bruins are leaving way too many points out there against bad teams. Not just bad teams, but really bad teams. Okay? That's inexcusable. And there's a reason why these teams are bad, and the Bruins need to go out and play those teams to show those teams why they're bad, and they're just not doing it. I don't know if it's because they're playing down to their opponents or whatnot, but it's becoming a really bad habit with this team against bad teams. And as far as Zdeno Chara, I agree with Marie 100%. I think it's time that Neely and Sweeney sit down with him after this season and say, you know what, I think it's time we move on from you. We're not going to give you no $5 million again for next year. That's not going to happen. If you want to continue to play, good luck elsewhere. We appreciate what you did for us over the years. You got us a cup, and you were a great captain. And one more thing, guys, Tuukka Rask did play very well in that game since he's been back from the injury, but the overtime game winner needs to make that save.
Right.
Down on his knees already on his knees. That Philadelphia player had time to pick and choose where he wanted to put that shot, and that's exactly what he did.
I appreciate the call, Mark. I mean, Mark's never been a Tuca lover, so.
It's a great shot by Sanheim.
Yep.
He picks the corner, and there's no question, you know, maybe Rask was screened. Maybe he didn't think he was going to be able to pick that spot. The Flyers ultimately make the play. Getting back to Chara, Don Sweeney and Cam Neely ultimately have to have that discussion anyway with Chara. He signed a one-year incentive-laden deal for $5 million, essentially. He'll be an unrestricted free agent.
That's more than that with the bonus. Bonuses.
So, you know, it's going to have to come up, you know, that conversation. Okay, is he going to be a part of our future going forward? If he is, what is the pay structure going to be looking like at this point? You know, and as far as playing teams below them in the standings, that's something that the coaching staff had talked about heading into the break, playing to a certain standard. That a lot of times, I think the feeling from the coaching staff is that sometimes the Bruins play to the level of competition based on where they are on the standings, not necessarily to the standard that they want them to play. I think overall, whether it's game to game or the way that they want to play from an identity perspective, that's something that has to be established here in the next 30 games heading to the playoffs.
Yeah, and I think it's important, though, to look at the big picture of the season. You know, we get caught up in, okay, they've won two out of the last eight games. Mm-hmm. The Washington Capitals just snapped a seven-game losing streak. Every team, almost every team, is going to go through a lull in their season where they struggle to win. And the Bruins are going through it right now. And, yeah, they've left points on the table, no question. And they've lost to some teams that are out of the playoff structure, including twice to Philadelphia over the last couple of weeks. Philadelphia's now won six in a row.
I was just going to say
so
that, yeah.
You know, you catch teams at the right time, at the wrong time, whatever the case is. You go through little stretches during the season, you know, whether it's not getting the save at the right time, whether it's a breakdown defensively at the wrong time, whether it's, you know, not being able to score 5-on-5. There's all sorts of things that kind of come into play. And right now, they're in that, where they're not getting the save at the right, you know, like, you know, Halak has struggled to make that save at the right time recently. They haven't gotten the 5-on-5 secondary scoring recently. They've had defensive breakdowns recently. So they've just got to get through it. You got to get through it. And I always say when you're losing, you know, we talk about it, when you're losing games, are you getting points? All right. So that, you know, they've won two out of their last eight, but they've gotten points in five of them,
yeah.
So, okay, you know, you're still kind of getting points. Get through it. All right, it's time. It's time, and I gotta believe that the message from Bruce Cassidy after last game, and you asked me right off the top, does it have an effect on the team? We'll find out tomorrow. I mean, what a great way to find your game again and to beat a team that you haven't beaten in what 13 games or 14 games straight games, you know, the Washington mm-hmm. Capitals in Washington. So this is a great test for them. It's a great challenge for them here tomorrow. Let's see if they can, you know, and turn it around. But you're going to go, and I think it's just important to keep that in perspective, that you are going to go through lull. Toronto's gone through lull. You know, Pittsburgh has gone through a lull. Columbus has gone through a bad time. These are all teams that are in the playoffs. Washington, I just, you know, example, lost seven in a row prior to yesterday.
And then in the
big all teams got to go through it.
And I think it's a good point. I think around the National Hockey League, because it's separated by the bye and the All-Star break, these are the dog days of the National Hockey League season, where all of a sudden you might see some bumps in the road. And the Washington Capitals, a lot of players were talking about their recent skid, and part of that was because, A, they played a lot of hockey, but more importantly, B, they said maybe we got a little bit ahead of ourselves because we could see the breakup coming.
Yeah, and I mean, just to that point, you've gotten 7 points in those eight games, right? We're talking about this eight-game stretch where you've only won two. I mean, you're only a point below 500. It doesn't feel as good.
Right.
But
well, you've had an opportunity to pass Toronto and Montreal.
No question.
And in the last, you know, handful of games, and you haven't done it. They haven't lit everything on fire either. Toronto loses again yesterday. They're struggling to find wins right now. Montreal's actually played better here recently, but you know, look, Buffalo wins 10 in a row, and then they win, what, 7 of their next 23 games?
Well, if you look around the league, there's a, you know, kind of look at, you know, in the standings, they put the last 10. There's a lot of teams that are 5-5, 6-4, 4-6. Everybody's, yeah. There's, you know, not a lot of teams that are hot.
Is points. in the way that the NHL does their points, if you play 10 games, if you get 10 points, that's 500 hockey. You might lose every game.
And get right.
but you're losing all in overtime.
0-0 and 10. So yeah.
That's 500 hockey. That's the way it's looked at. I mean, you know, so you got to go through this time, and how quickly can you pull yourself out of it?
All right, let's get to Sports Hub headlines. Joe Haggerty will join us coming up. It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show here on a Saturday morning.
This is where Boston talks hockey. The Sports Hub Hockey Show on the home of the Bees. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
.5 The Sports Hub and the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Don't forget, coming up at the end of this segment, we'll give you a chance to win some Bruins tickets for this Tuesday night's game at the Garden. But right now, we welcome in Joe Haggerty, who joins us from NBC Sports Boston on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Good morning, Hags.
Good morning. How's it going?
Good. What did you make of Bruce Cassidy's comments after the game the other night about, you know, trying to get these guys, the defense especially, to buy in? What did that mean to you?
I think there's some frustration with mistakes being repeated, with, you know, awareness type mistakes being made, time and place in the game to do certain things. I think certainly there's some frustration there with Charlie McAvoy, and I think his decision to get aggressive at that point, at the end of a period when the Bruins had really controlled that period, were up 1-0, less than a minute to go, and then he misses the net when he does make that decision, and then it goes down the other end, and, you know, they give up a goal, and it really changes the momentum of the game in a big way. And, you know, I think it was also interesting that he mentioned Zdeno Chara and the leadership there and getting some of those younger guys to buy in. But my own personal feeling, my own personal gut instinct as to what was going on when he said it is, I think he was angry about that goal at the end of the first period, and I think Charlie McAvoy was the subject of most of it, if I were to guess.
I don't agree with it, Joe. I don't agree with you. I think McAvoy made the right play. I think he stood in there. He kept the puck in the zone. He attacked the net. I think he did everything right. He missed the net. I get that. He did everything right there. They want him doing that. And
I understand that, Beers, but at the end of a period with a minute to go,
Joe,
taking a risk
defense,
like
your
that,
partner has to back you up there. You're supposed to do that. I have no problem with McAvoy's decision to do that. He missed the net. I get that. I understand that. Yep. But I have no problem with him keeping the puck in there. For the Flyers were flying the zone. They were gone. And it was a giveaway by Philadelphia. McAvoy read the play, kept the puck in, and attacked the net.
That's when you need
no
to hit
problem.
The net when they're flying the zone right like that, right? I mean,
he kept it in.
Flying the zone, it went right back around and went right back out, though.
He missed the net. I understand that, but he made the right read and the right play.
Yeah.
That's where your partner and maybe another forward has to have your back and cover up.
Right.
You can't let somebody get behind you with less than a minute to go. And I put that on 33.
Yep, and then that's why he was mentioned. And, you know, certainly I think there's a sense, too, right, that, you know, at some point in the second half of the season, they would like him to maybe sit for a game or two and rest and make sure he's where he needs to be, his legs are where they need to be to start the playoffs. And I don't know if there's some hesitancy there for him to do that on his part. But, you know, I get that part of it. I just, my opinion, at the end of a period, when you've controlled it and you're up 1-0 like that, I don't know if that's the time to risk what
I want McAvoy making that play every time.
Yeah. I think there's times and places to make that play. I don't know if that was one of them, but, you know, maybe we disagree on that.
I mean, from a larger perspective, no question that you guys disagree on that. From a larger perspective, though, you know, it's one thing to say, okay, this guy made a mistake or this guy made a mistake and we need them to be better. But when I hear the coach talking about how Chara is the leader and he needs to get McAvoy to buy in and he needs to get Brandon Carlo to continue to buy in and, you know, and Kevin Miller, and he starts, you know, calling out those types of things, like, that concerns me more than just, okay, this guy made a mistake and he's got to be better. Buying in to me says, you know, he feels like some of these guys are going into business for themselves, and that's not a good sign for, you know, for the future here.
No, going into business for themselves and making the same mistakes, repeating mistakes, making mistakes that are entirely avoidable. You know, I think all of that stuff and the language of saying buy in definitely raises a red flag and it's a concern. Now, the thing that I wrote about yesterday was obviously you're pointing to this stuff and, you know, there are things that need to be cleaned up defensively, but we're also talking about, you know, a Bruins team that's second in goals against in the Eastern Conference. And I think by and large this year, there has been pretty good buy-in defensively and they have been mostly doing the right things. I think all of this gets put under a microscope and is compounded and is really paid attention to when you're not getting the secondary scoring, when you're not scoring enough goals, when you're not getting any separation from other teams. You know, when Danton Heinen has a puck in the slot in the third period, completely time and space wide open and plenty of net to shoot at after David Krejci makes a great pass to him. And, you know, he can't handle the puck. Obviously, it jumped over his stick. But, you know, there's been a few times where Heinen's been put in those kind of positions and he can't finish. And you need players in those positions at those times in the games to be able to finish and get the play done. And then you win 3-2 in the third period. You're not worried about overtime and losing that point. And I think at that point, that's when you start looking at these defensive mistakes and they take on a bigger focus in the game. And, you know, I think his frustration was understandable at the end of that game, but I wonder if it wasn't entirely, you know, about that. It was much about, you know, this is where we are right now. We're not scoring enough goals, so we can't make any mistakes defensively. And that's a tough way for the Bruins to win if they're just relying on their top line, their top power play to score goals, and their goalies to get the job done all the time for them. That's a hard place to be.
Until they can score some goals 5-on-5 and until they can get some secondary scoring, I think the whole message is that defensively, team defense-wise, we need to be better, whether it's decisions with the puck, whether it's decisions without the puck. And you can break down every defenseman and break down things that they're doing well and things that they're doing poorly right now. And, you know, we diagram one play there on McAvoy, but McAvoy has to be better. And there's a lot of areas that he needs to be better in. And, you know, Kevin Miller has dipped in play here recently, you know, a guy that I'm a big fan of in the way that he plays and the way that he competes every night, but he needs to be better here recently. John Moore didn't handle being sat out of the lineup as well as he needed to. Zdeno Chara, we already been over him. He needs to be better. I mean, that first period the other day was not a good period for him. And so there's a number of defensemen you can pick out and say, you know, Brandon Carlo. Brandon, I love when you're skating, but move the puck to somebody else and then jump up into the play and either go to the net or come late. But don't carry the puck end to end. That's not your forte right now. And every time he starts to do it, I say, all right, move the puck to somebody else and then jump into the play, because you can do that with your feet. You can do that with your legs because he's a good enough skater. I like a lot of what Carlo's doing right now, but when he tries to carry the puck end to end, it's not effective.
And he's got a pretty good shot, too, Busy. If he's the trailer at the end and somebody can get the puck back to him as he's getting into the zone with some momentum. Absolutely.
No, he wants, you know, he's feeling, I mean, I like the way he's defending. I like the way he's penalty killing. I like a lot of the things that he's doing right now, being more assertive in certain areas, whether it's in front of the net or in the corners. And he also wants to jump up into the play, but he doesn't need to lead the rush. Move the puck, get into the play. And that's what I want to see more of. And he's doing that, too. But, you know, when he starts to try to carry it end to end, you know, that's trying to do too much.
Out of his comfort zone, for sure.
All right. So in addition to, obviously, as you mentioned, the defensive issues that Bruce Cassidy is focusing on right now, there's the offensive issues. And we're still, you know, a few weeks out from the trade deadline here. You know, what are the odds that we see a move sooner rather than later? I think we all expect there to be, you know, trade or two coming up before the deadline, but does it wait until deadline day, or is there pressure on to try and get this done sooner so that they can get some of that scoring here as they go through what's going to be a pretty busy month?
Yeah, having lost 3 in a row and 5 of 6, I think the pressure is definitely there to get it done sooner than later and to address those issues and to get, you know, another player in that can finish off plays, get put on that second line potentially. Certainly add a little bit more offensive oomph to what's going on right now and allow the Bruins to get some goals 5-on-5 from somebody other than Patrice Bergeron, David Pastrnak, and Brad Marchand. And, you know, in an ideal world, they would get it done soon. I don't know that that's going to happen, though. I think they've always tried to be proactive and get it done sooner, as soon as they can, just to, you know, if for any other reason, get more bang for your buck for the player that you're getting around the deadline, get more games with that player. That would benefit you as well, and to get the jump on the other teams. And I think couple that with kind of the way they've struggled the last few weeks and the way that they've looked, you definitely want to get it done, especially when, you know, Toronto already made the preemptive move and, you know, got Jake Muzzin and probably made their big deal that they're going to make to make them a better team, presumably, at least on paper. But I'm wondering if they're going to be able to get it done. This may be something that comes down closer to the deadline, as it has a lot of years in the past. We'll see if they can get it done a few days before, like they did with Rick Nash, and get their work done ahead of time. But it may come down to the 11th hour at this point, just given some of the players that are out there. And I think across the league, there's high demand for the player that the Bruins are looking for, a top six guy with experience that can score and maybe has a little bit of size and strength and snarl to his game as well. I think there's a lot of teams that need that element, not just the Bruins.
Well, it's an interesting point that you bring up, because obviously we focus on the Bruins and their needs, but at the same time, you know, if you're going out looking for, you know, specific types of players, and obviously they are, you know, the teams that have those types of players that are willing to deal are in a position of strength, right? They're in a position where they can start a bidding war potentially, and oftentimes that's going to drag out. They're not going to be in any hurry to make that deal in the first week of February if they can, you know, spend the next couple of weeks fielding offers and try to drive those prices up.
No, especially if it seems that, no, they're not going anywhere. There's no urgency on their part to get the deal done unless they're blown away. And, you know, I'm sure there's going to be hesitancy on the Bruins' end to give up some of the assets that you're going to have to give up to get the player that you want, right? I mean, you know, last year, I remember right after the deadline or right after the Rick Nash trade, Don Sweeney and talking to him, and you know, there was it was difficult to give up the prospect. It was difficult, certainly, to give up the first round pick and to give up the assets that they were giving up to get Nash. It was the right deal at the time. It made sense. If the concussions didn't come into play, he'd probably even still be with the Bruins, and we wouldn't be talking about filling that need on the roster. But I think, you know, it's going to come down to that again. And what's really interesting is going to be, what are the Bruins willing to give up for what particular kind of player? You know, if it becomes a first-round pick, you have to give up for rentals. I don't think that's going to happen for them, but it's going to be interesting to see if that's what other teams are going to demand. Or are they willing to give that up if it's a player that they're going to be able to control for a little while that's different than a player that's in the last year of his contract? But, you know, given the prospects they have, given the assets they have, given that they didn't have a first-round pick last year at the draft and they felt the pain of not having that first-round pick, I think it's going to be really interesting to see what the Bruins are willing to give up, when they're willing to give it up, and who they're going to be willing to give it up for.
All right, Joe Haggerty, NBC Sports Boston, joining us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Appreciate the time, as always.
Thanks, boys. Yeah.
All right, Haggerty joins us each week right around this time, and we'll talk to him next Saturday as well. We'll talk to you more coming up. 617-779-0985 is the number for your calls, but it's also now time to give you a chance to pick up a couple of tickets. Caller number 10 right now to the Pride Motor Group contest line at 617-931-0985. We'll score a pair of tickets to see the Bruins take on the red-hot New York Islanders this Tuesday night at the Garden. Puck drops at 7 o'clock. Select tickets are still available for that game at Ticketmaster.com/Bruins. But caller number 10 right now will get a pair of tickets from us. Again, that's 617-931-0985 for the Pride Motor Group contest line. Again, we'll take more of your calls coming up in the next hour. It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show here on a Saturday morning.
The Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Zerai, and Bob Beers on the home of the Bees, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Hour number two of the Sports Hub Hockey Show from the Town Fair Tire Studios. Ryan Johnston, Judd Zerai, Bob Beers, 617-779-0985 for your calls. We'll get to some of them here in this half hour, and also talk about a few other things. We spent a lot of that first hour obviously talking about Bruce Cassidy's comments about the defensive play of this team of late, and some rather pointed comments. And again, kind of looking forward to tomorrow's game to see how they respond to that in particular. But also a matchup that typically has not gone particularly well for the Bruins against the Washington Capitals for tomorrow. So we can get into some of that here. Also, have to talk about a couple of other things that have happened this week, including the debut of Trent Frederick. First-round draft pick from a few years ago. Trent Frederick gets his first crack at the NHL. I'll give the kid this. He knows how to make a first impression among the Bruins fans with the fight against Winnipeg the other night, the shots of mom and dad in the crowd high-fiving and loving what they were seeing out of the sun was great. But obviously that's the most noticeable impact that he makes. But what did you guys see out of Trent Frederick in the first couple of games here? What do you think a guy like that can bring to this team? Does a little youthful exuberance, help this team, give him a little shot in the arm right now? I mean, where does he fit in? Give us your thoughts on him in the early going here.
Well, first of all, I think the idea was to give Trent Frederick a look at some point during the season. It just happened to be now. Mm-hmm. And he started to really play well in Providence. And he had talked about it, learning to be a pro, learning to figure out a routine. You know, it's a little bit different than playing at the University of Wisconsin and having some fun in Madison because you're a pro player at this point. Now you got to figure out the American Hockey League and the next level. I think he's been reliable and steady here in the early going. I don't know how long the Bruins are going to take a look at him necessarily. What does he look like playing primarily here in the first two games? He's played with David Backes and Danton Heinen for a couple of shifts. Danton Heinen was elevated to play with David Krejci. The other thing that I think the coaching staff said he needs to figure out is, okay, you're a big body. Who am I playing with in David Backes, who likes to play? Let's play in some straight lines north and south, and that's the type of player he is. Get the puck deep and start to forecheck. I think the Bruins would like to see more of that. But again, put it all in perspective. He's a 20-year-old player getting his first taste in the National Hockey League, and I think he could be a valuable piece and have a pretty good National Hockey League career. That's a good first impression.
The first game was much better than the second game.
Mm-hmm. Which oftentimes is
sure,
right? I mean,
you know,
it's a little
adrenaline,
different.
Yep. You're running on, hey, my call up. You're excited. You know, you're ready to go. Parents in the stand. It was all great the first game in terms of like the visual side of it, and he had to feel good, and of course the fight, but he was more involved. If you look beyond the fight, I thought he was a little nervous in the first period. Got better as the game went on. The game is tied late, 2 minutes to go, and that line's on the ice. You know, so that tells you right there what they thought of his game. Second game wasn't nearly as – he wasn't as involved. He wasn't as good. I mean, I think he had 9 minutes of ice time in the second game against Philadelphia. So, you know, it's way too early of a sample size.
No question.
And I'll even throw – I know we're talking about Trent Frederick, but I'll throw Solaric in that mold as well because – he comes up, he plays a couple of really good games, and now he's in game 5 against Philadelphia, and it's the third period, and they need a goal, and he's not on that line with Krejci and DeBrusque. You know, they put Heinen there. I know Heinen missed a great opportunity, but that tells you what they thought of his game at that point, and they needed a jump, and he wasn't giving it to them. So, you know, like a lot of people, when they come up and they make a good first impression or they're excited and the adrenaline's running and you play well, can you sustain it? Can you keep it? And so I guess, you know, for Solaric, it's been 5 games, a little bigger sample size. I think it's 5 games, if I'm not mistaken. And then, but the break in between. And for Frederick, it's only been 2. So you need more. You need more. And we'll see where it goes from here. But I'm sure the talking to is like, all right, you know, you played a good first game, you dipped in your second game. We need you more involved here in Washington on Sunday. And if you're going to be here and if you're going to be here full time.
And that makes me think about the young players in particular. And that was part of the reason that the Bruins had such a terrific season last year, because they had so many young players that were contributing. Heinen, DeBrusque, Corrali, Grizzlick, I'm sure I'm missing somebody, Charlie McAvoy. But
Bjork, Corrali.
It's not only, you know, it's game to game for Trent Frederick at this point in the small sample size as the Bruins get their first look at him in the National Hockey League level. But for those young players, it's year after year after year. Can you do it as well as you played last year? Can you match that and be even better this upcoming season? And I think part of the bumps in the road that the Bruins have experienced this year has been because those young players have not been as consistent or as effective at times as they were last year.
Yeah, and scores are going to show up more when they're not as consistent. So a guy like Jake DeBrusque, right? I mean, he's a guy that you depend on to score. When he's not scoring, it shows up a little bit more than maybe if it's a dip in play of maybe somebody on the fourth line. But, you know, and DeBrusque, he had a good game Tuesday. He didn't have a good game Thursday. You know, he was off of his feet a lot on Thursday. And I don't know what it is with him. It takes him a while to get up.
He knows it.
You sit there and say, get up. Why are you laying there?
Either somebody's told him or he realizes it because he actually mentioned it during one of the intermission interviews.
Yeah, well, it happened. It happened again Thursday. So, but, you know, and then there's a lot of talk of, okay, you know, where's he more effective? And It's the left side. So if you're looking for, you know, they've moved him over to the right out of necessity because they've got all these left wingers and they haven't found anybody who can play the right side. They need a right winger for Krejci and put DeBrusque back on the left side. And that's, you know, you ask when you're talking about trades, I mean, that's what they need right now. And that's why they went out last year and got Rick Nash. But some of the younger guys, I mean, I think Grizzlick has found a consistency. I know he sat out the other day, but I like his game. He's found a consistency. I think Corrali's found a consistency and what makes him successful. You know, there might be a little dip here and there, but by and large, he knows what makes him successful and he mm-hmm. plays hard every night. But some of the guys that are counted on to put points up on the board, the Heinens, the DeBrusque, and some other guys like that, you know, Donato, they're trying to find that. And Frederick now fits into that category. And not that he's going to put up huge points, but okay, find what's going to keep you in the NHL. You know, find what you have to do on a night-in, night-out basis to keep you in the NHL and to make you an effective player. He's only had two games, but that's what if he wants to be here, that's what he has to do.
Well, as Frederick comes up, Donato gets sent to Providence, JFK gets
sent. Got a goal and assist last night. Good to see.
Well, and look, we've seen this earlier in the season, right? They sent him down there. He had success. He gets his way back up. Obviously they're looking to get those guys jump started and, you know, get them, you know, hopefully going offensively and then give them another crack. I mean, it's not like they're, you know, sending them off to Siberia here, but at the same time, you know, this is the consistent struggle that they've had as the season has gone on. Is there, you know, as you said, Judd, they're trying to get these young guys going. They haven't been able to be consistent enough to stay in the lineup, and now it's like, well, now we got to just give somebody else a shot and see what they can do, and they continue to try and mix and match and just find something that works beyond that top unit, and they haven't been able to do it all season long.
And for those guys, you know, for the young kids, they've been given a lot of opportunities. Who's going to come up and seize that opportunity? I think, you know, when we're talking about a lot
of... They've had 51 games this year to do it.
Yeah. Right. And I think if we're talking about some of the second-year players, Jake DeBrusque has, you know, based on the production, you know, and just the eye test, he's probably had the best second season of some of the young players we're talking about. Sean Corrali, I think, of the forwards. You know, Grizzlick has been very good, and I think Sean Corrali in the role that he plays for the most part has established himself. But if we're talking about the guys who are trying to find a fit playing on the right side with David Krejci or just playing with David Krejci in general, Jake's got 14 goals. He is on pace to exceed his total from last year. It's some of the other guys that have given these opportunities that haven't seized it. You want to see that jam. You want to see that desire to not only take that spot, but stay in the National Hockey League permanently.
And yeah, I mean, it's, again, it's the consistency of that, too. You can see that maybe a night here, a night there, but if you can't do it every single night out, that's a different story.
No, and, you know, and I want to go back to a guy like Danton Heinen in particular, because he's played hard, and he's given you the effort night in and night out.
I think he did everything right
but score
before the puck jumped off the stick.
He won battles.
He kept control of the puck. You know, all of a sudden he gets a little jump in his step because he's up there on that second line late in the game trying to score. And, you know, he wins a couple battles along the wall and does the right things for a couple shifts in a row. And then the puck jumps off his stick. And it's,
and it's not easy to do what he's done. Listen, he's still a plus player. He scored 6 goals this season. And that, I think, is emblematic to how reliable he is. And the coaches have him out there all the time. I think even Bruce Cassidy had mentioned we'd like to get him into the mix a little bit more on the penalty kill as well. So you know that he's reliable.
Who had more points last year, DeBrusk or Heinen?
Heinen did.
Yeah.
Heinen did.
DeBrusk had some huge goals, and he played better in the playoffs than Heinen did. But Heinen, over the season, had more points.
I think the coaching staff, when they look at Danton Heinen, I think one of the things that they contemplate is when he does score his points and when he does pick up those offensive opportunities, maybe it's come on the bottom two lines. Maybe it's been on that third line. Maybe it's been up against a different matchup, whether it's defensively or the forwards that you're coming up against. Can he go up there occasionally and provide you what you want? Yes. But if you look at the bulk of his production last year, it came with Riley Nash and David Backes on a third line.
617-779-0985. Let's go to Mike and Webster. You're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hey, guys. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
Good. Quick question for you. I know that the Bruins are lacking on offense. And with Corey Crew's offensive ability, have they ever thought about converting him from defense to offense? I mean, instead of going out and spending an arm and a leg for a guy and losing some of your young prospects, what about converting Corey to offense?
Well, no, I don't think that's in the cards, because one of your best weapons is because he's a defenseman, right? Because he's an offensive defenseman. What does that do to your power play and all that? No, that's something that comes up every so often from callers. It's not happening.
Tory Krug, let's take the idea. He's not moving it forward. Yeah. But he is an elite power play quarterback on the back end. He rates, like, I haven't looked at today's stats, but I want to say he is tied for the league lead among defensemen in power play assists. He's a wizard on the back end when you've got the extra man. And those guys are hard to find, and you can see what type of a weapon the power play can be. But in the bigger picture, when you look at the Bruins' salary structure, and I think a lot of people, they look at a guy like Tory Krug, and there was certainly a lot of talk heading into the season, would Tory Krug be a trade chip down the road? This is before the season. But as the season has played out, and as the Bruins address their salary structure, I think that more and more that you want to keep a guy like Tory Krug in your lineup and on your team. Who's going to run the power play if he's not here? Who's the guy in the back end? Charlie McAvoy has not illustrated he can do it at this point. Even 5-on-5.
Not at that level.
No, not at all. You know, and Charlie's had some time on the power play, and this is something that has been brought up to him. With Charlie in particular, you're on the power play and you're still not registering shots on net. Take the play away the other day that he makes against Philadelphia. It's the right play, the right decision. Yes, he misses the net. But overall, heading into that game, he had 26 shots in 23 games. They want him to be more effective in that role. But until you get a guy that can run the man advantage and how pivotal it can be for you, Tory Krug is a guy that you want to keep in your lineup. And based on your salary structure for the guys that Don Sweeney has to re-up, I think more and more Tory Krug fits into your defensive core. He's a guy that you want to keep. He's a guy that you, I think it's going to be easier for you to keep him based on the contracts that the Bruins are going to have to dole out going forward.
Does Tory Krug get a bad rap defensively? I mean, look, we know his strength is obviously as an offensive, you know, powerhouse from the blue line, but you know, is he a liability defensively? I don't look at him at that.
I don't think liability is the word.
Yeah.
Certainly not his strongest point.
I mean, he's not, you know, a top two defender on your team.
No.
Obviously. He's not a guy that you're going to be using to kill penalties on a regular basis, obviously. But
I think ideally you go into the playoffs if he's on your third pairing and then he gives you the power play and the offense, and if you're down a goal, he's going to play more, that's ideal. And it's not to say that he's when I say third pairing, the point is, you know, in defensive situations, he's going to play less. In offensive situations, whether it's an offensive zone faceoff or whether you're down a goal, he's going to be out there every other shift. If you're up a goal, he's not going to be on the ice as much. So I think that kind of spells it out right there. I mean,
yeah.
And then at 5-on-5 situations, you know, last year he was forced into, you know, second pairing defensemen along with him and Kevin Miller were second pairing defensemen against Toronto last year. And I think they were exposed. So, you know, if that's your third pairing, I like the D. Yeah, I like the D as a group right now. I like the unit that they have. There's guys that need to play better, and there's as a group, as a unit, and just as defensemen, you know, we always talk about team defense, but just as defensemen, there's certain things that each of them has to clean up in their game. But as a group, I like the D core that they have.
And he's such a good transition player. I know, you know, we talked about what he can do on the man advantage, but for the way the game is played in particular, when he gets the puck, his ability to find that seam or hit a guy in stride on the tape, hard to do. And you need that. So you spend less time in your own zone.
Talked recently about breakouts and you know, Torrey Krug is, he is willing to use the middle of the ice, and a lot of guys aren't. And when he does that, there will be turnovers once in a while, you know. I played with a guy in Ray Bourque that turned the puck over a lot, but then the next shift he was out there putting a puck in the net. So because he was willing to try things. I mean, he was willing to try to make that right play. And sometimes when Krug tries to use the middle of the ice, it's not on him. It's about the centerman not being ready for it or not being in proper position. He's trying to use the middle of the ice on the breakout. But Krug is a guy that will use that middle of the ice effectively when he's on, and the Bruins and the Bruins are better for it because they can come out of the zone more cleanly.
I think there were a lot of people heading into the season who wondered, okay, you've got Charlie McAvoy and Brandon Carlo, who are both restricted free agents. What type of contracts are they going to command at season's end? And I'm talking about conversations that were had in September. How would a guy like Torrey Krug fit into that salary structure? In my mind, I think you can definitely fit him and still add to your team. Don Sweeney has positioned his team based on the salary structure. They're right in the middle of the pack. He has some room to be able to not only sign those guys, but keep a guy like Torrey Krug, who's fabulous on the man advantage, and still add up front.
Well, I think people get nervous about, well, you're paying Torrey Krug over $5 million a year, and you hear Bob Beers say, ideally, he's a third-pairing defenseman. But it's different than that.
But who's on the ice when you're down a goal?
Exactly.
Him. He's on the ice every other shift when you're down a goal.
If your third pairing defenseman is the power play quarterback, and he's the guy that you can turn to when you need a goal,
right there.
Like, that's not something that every team has.
Where are they if they don't have the power play that they have this year?
They're nowhere. they're nowhere. If they can't score 5-on-5, if you can't score 5-on-4, you're really...
The other day?
All right, we will continue here on this Saturday morning. It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show, 617-779-0985. More of your calls next.
Get in on the discussion. 617-779-0985. The Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub. Let's get to a few more calls here. We go to John in Chelmsford up next. Hey, John.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Listen, I'm just calling about Matt Grizzlick always being the odd man out. I don't know why this kid sits. This kid is one of your top defensemen on the team. He leads the defensemen in plus minuses. Not only that, he leads the whole team in plus minuses. And yet, he's always the odd man out. They always switch him out. And that's the only reason why I'm calling, because the defender, this kid should be playing every single game. He never makes a bad play. And when he does, he fixes it very quickly, as best he can. Thanks for taking my call, guys, and have a good day.
I appreciate it, John. I mean, he's not always the odd man out, but, you know.
It's been more mostly. But yeah. I will say this, though. I don't disagree. I want to see him in the lineup. And I think for a coach, I think he's the easy
Because he's the youngest guy, yeah. Right? Yeah, like he's yeah. The yeah, that's the easy.
McAvoy needs easy reps because he's been out because of injury. It's convenient, but they're getting to a point now where some harder decisions have to be made, and that's we've already kind of discussed on defense with what you look to do with some.
Well, right now, I mean, there's no question. If you just had to put your six best defensemen on the lineup, he's no question he's in the lineup.
Yes. I know the decor is a little bit different this year, but if you think back to last year, there were a lot of questions. You can't have Torrey Krug and Matt Grzelcyk in your lineup.
That's changed.
That's when they played their best hockey.
Well, his puck moving ability, and then I think his ability. When you talk about defending, who's a better defender? Grzelcyk's a better defender than Krug. Krug's better offensively. Grzelcyk hasn't found that offensive game yet, but he's defended. He's found a way. He's learned how to defend by using his feet and having a good stick and, the body position. Sometimes he'll get overwhelmed a little bit by a bigger forward. Some of those matchups have to be kept a close eye on, and they do. They try to make sure that he's putting proper situations out there. So there is some limitation there once in a while with who he's out on the ice against. But he's learned how to defend with his stick and his feet. And he closes off plays in the neutral zone before they even get into the offensive zone. So he's not defending in the corner. He's defending out near the blue line by closing on a guy when the pass gets to him and knocking the puck away. So he's I want him in my lineup. Absolutely. I don't disagree with that part of it. But it is a convenient solution at times for the coach. And like I said, I've seen that, you've seen that over the years.
Well, that's insane. That's just kind of the default position.
It's like out of the minors, the guy that doesn't have to clear waivers.
It's the youngest guy, right? It's the guy with the least experience. Absolutely. Eric, you're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hey, how you doing? I actually disagree with the last caller. I think Moore should be in the lineup more often, but more so Achari. I like what he brings, and it seems like he's sitting a lot. Just that physical game, especially in a game like against Washington tomorrow, I think they need both those two as physical presence.
I appreciate it, Eric.
Yeah, you might see it. I mean, Washington's a physical team, no question about it. They're big. They are a big team, and it's one of the reasons that they had success last year. They had the good combination of the size and the ability, offensively. So they played last night. They dominated Calgary in that game, at least based on the statistics. I didn't see the game, just based on shots, hits, all that. But they won it in the third period. It was a power play goal late in the third period. But, in Washington, I thought the Bruins played really well against the Capitals the last time out. I didn't like the goal that Backstrom scored that got through Halak in the third period, and it was right after I think the Bruins had tied the game, if I'm not mistaken. So they dominated the Capitals in that game. They deserved better, and they didn't get the save at the right time in that game. So let's see if they can muster something. And I go back to our original segment there. What kind of effect does Bruce Cassidy's words have on the team? We're going to find out tomorrow.
Let me go to one more nuance since you mentioned Noel Achari. One of the things that we've seen here in the last few weeks is that Bruce Cassidy likes the look of Sean Corrali on the wing when he has Noel Achari in the lineup. You don't have to necessarily put Noel on the right side. You can keep him in the middle and you put Sean Corrali on the left, but that's something for the coaching staff to contemplate here down the road. You've got a number of different guys who can play in the middle there, whether it's Nordstrom, who you've seen at times, and he's playing all over the lineup. Chris Wagner at times, if you needed him, could play the middle. He's obviously better, not only playing
those two guys need to be on the wings, though, Judge.
Yeah, but playing on the wing. But I think putting Noel out there and putting Sean Corrali on the left side gives you a different look that the coaching staff has had a good long sample size with now.
And kind of going back to that when you can fool around with those guys a little bit more with sitting out because they're going to give you the proper response when they get back in the lineup. But it's the role of your lower six or your lower, three. You're going to sit out once in a while. Mm. And then you come back hungry and you do your job. I mean, that's kind of the nature of that position. That happens a lot. Well, that happens a lot.
And that's, you know, look, we talked about that earlier with John Moore, right? He sits
well when he was in the lineup. He just didn't handle sitting out as well as
right.
He needed
to. Right, but you said that first game back, it was a rough game.
It was not good.
You know, it's like,
and then he sat out a couple more plus the 9-day break, and he gets back in on Thursday. And, yeah, he made the mistake that created the penalty shot in the third period, but he also played pretty well other than that. He played okay other than that. Played much better than he did the last time he got back in the lineup. And he can be a valuable player for you. And he's a hardworking guy. He's strong.
Well, if that's your seventh best defenseman, you're in pretty good shape,
well,
right?
And that's the whole idea. Yeah. But I think at the beginning of the season, you know, if everybody had been healthy at the beginning of the year, and we don't know this because they weren't healthy at the beginning of the year, that Grizzlick was probably the odd man out at the beginning of the season. Mm-hmm. But he's played himself into the lineup.
All right, let's get Sports Hub headlines here. We got another half hour to go, and Billy Jaffe will join us to go around the NHL coming up next.
Press the right hand, Sam. Let's go!
The Sports Hub Hockey Show. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Sports Hub Hockey Show here on a Saturday morning. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers here in the Town Fair Tire Studios. And now, as we do each week around this time, we welcome in Billy Jaffe of Nesson. He joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline this morning. Good morning, Billy.
Good morning, RJ. Good morning, Judd and Beersy. How are you guys today?
Good. We're starting to see some movement around the league, Billy. We got some trades happening here in the late stages of January, early February. Things going to start moving a little bit earlier than perhaps they would in other years this year because there's so many teams that are maybe willing to be open for business?
Well, we saw some trades last year earlier, too, and if I remember correctly, the trade day wasn't as electrifying as perhaps we at times hope. But, you know, you get a team in Pittsburgh, and I'm assuming you guys have already talked about it earlier in the show, the Pittsburgh Penguins. Jimmy Rutherford doesn't screw around, right? I mean, in the past, he's not messed around. He says he's going to make deals. He does that. Remember earlier this year when they announced his signing of a new extension as a general manager? He also announced the trade that day, the Carl Hagelin trade, and for Tanner Pearson. So he doesn't mess around. He goes at it early. He always has the philosophy. I've talked to him in the past. He says, I don't like waiting to the deadline if I don't have to. I like being aggressive. And he was aggressive. So will we see more? I mean, the feeling is that, yeah, and I'm a believer. I don't know if Beardsley and Judd feel the same way, and you, RJ. I mean, I like the earlier moves, the better. It gives your team more time to kind of get acquainted with new guys coming in. But I think so. I mean, this is an interesting trade for both Pitt and Florida. I mean, Florida's setting themselves up for something bigger, it sure seems like.
Well, we're going to get to
you
to
mean
that.
Sergei Bobrovsky?
Panarin.
And Panarin.
Panarin, yeah. And Bobrovsky. Yeah, I mean, yeah. It seems they're going to make a move for it. Now, whether or not those two guys want to go down there later, you know, when they have an opportunity, that's to be determined. We know that there's no state income tax.
No state tax. Pretty good quality of life. I mean, there's a lot to like about there.
Russian, and there's a big Russian population, too, down there. There is. You know, there's a lot of that people that go down there and live there. And I think that there's something to be said for that. And there's a comfort factor. I mean, to me, I'd be shocked if Panarin doesn't end up in either Florida, New York, I don't think L.A., but maybe even L.A. You know, it just seems like that. That's where he wants to be.
Well, he's made it clear now that, I mean, he wants out of Columbus. He got some boos the other night at a home game after that was made public. But there's no doubt in anybody's mind now that he's not going to be sticking around there long term.
And what does Columbus do? Because they're in the playoffs. Do you keep them and lose them for nothing? Or do you make the trade before the deadline?
Well, and let's add on to that. They're only barely in the playoffs. They are three points in front of Carolina for the last spot.
Well, okay. My philosophy is that they have to trade these guys. I don't think they get anything for Sergei Bobrovsky. So if they can try and trade him, great. But otherwise, I think they keep him. Panarin's the one that should get you Boku return. But the people that I've spoken with that know the ownership management of Columbus well, Beers and Judd, they'd say that there's pressure, huge pressure to make the playoffs and to try and do some big things there with regard to, you know, financial, whatever. If that's true, then you don't trade him because you're probably not getting back anywhere near what it's worth. And you're just basically buying your own rentals, what you're doing by keeping him. The thing that I would be most cautious of, they can make Panarin and they can make Bobrovsky seem to be the bad guys. There's no doubt about it. But all of a sudden, let's say they actually win two rounds and both those guys really leave. That really puts the team in even a worse spot then. I mean, you know, all of a sudden they have a run in the playoffs a little bit, and then they get doinked by those two guys leaving for nothing. I just can't. If I'm GM, I can't stomach that.
Put it in perspective right now. So they have 32 games to go in the season.
Yep.
Just looking at the standings, they're 3 points up on Carolina. They have a game in hand on Carolina. That's for the second wild card. They're 3 points behind Washington for third place. They're 3 points behind Pittsburgh for second place.
Go ahead.
But the problem is, you've got all this stuff coming out about Panarin, about Bobrovsky. They've lost four in a row. And even though he continues to put up some points, the distraction is... I mean, it's a mega distraction right now in Columbus and how they handle it.
And how they do against the Bruins is going to play a big role in whether or not they make the playoffs. The Bruins haven't seen them yet.
Well, true. And here's the other thing. You're right about that. Tortorella ripped his team the other night.
Again.
Well, that's not unfunny. That's nothing new.
Well, of course, I know, but the point is it's all adding up. It's all coming together, and it doesn't feel good. If somebody says, hey, what would you do? I said, I would trade him. I would bite the bullet, so to speak. I would trade him. I would get absolutely as much as I could in return, and I'd say, see you later. We want players that want to be here. I don't know if Kekalainen will go that route, though. There seems to be, if this underlying or overt pressure to make the playoffs and do well is there, then I guess they keep it. But by the way, I just don't see a market for Bobrovsky right now. I just don't. Or at least a big one. You know, maybe you get a third-round pick, and that's it.
All right, Billy, circling back to the Pittsburgh trade, I want to talk about the Penguins for a little bit because this is a team that, you know, kind of earlier in the year, they were floundering a little bit. You know, they're kind of out on the edge of the wild card situation for a while. They've started to come on here, and now they pull the trigger on a trade, you know, and they're only 2 points out of first place in their division. I expect, as you said, Jimmy Rutherford's never met a trade he didn't like, really.
Nope.
Do you anticipate that they're going to continue to be active here over the next few weeks and try and get even better because the window's open there?
I was surprised they traded Alexiak. I mean, they don't have much size snarl on their team at all, and they trade their biggest guy. I mean, not that he's, but they don't have much of that.
You're right, Bob, but remember the fight that Alexiak had against Wilson a couple of weeks ago? And the rumblings are is that there wasn't a lot of feel goodness about how he handled that in Pittsburgh, meaning how he took it and didn't really seem to want to be involved in it. Now, that's not out of the words of any manager that's there, but that's just the rumblings that I've heard, and that therefore they almost felt that impact, Bob, that they wanted out of him wasn't there. So remember, they won Stanley Cups without any toughness on their back end in the past, without any real snarl. And so maybe they feel that they're just better off. They don't need that.
I don't know if that's the case, though, because Ian Cole did provide some of that.
Okay, but if you're talking fine. If you're talking any kind of the real tough guy, they didn't have
that. Not the fighting-wise, though, but I mean, they I think they regretted trading a Ryan Reeves, and then they ran up against Washington last year in the playoffs. So I guess I'm kind of looking at that and saying, if you're going to go against a team like Washington, does Pittsburgh have the right personnel at the current time to go up against a team like that?
I would say no, not right now. Could they try and make one more deal? Ryan's first, the initial question or premise, yeah. I mean, Jimmy Rutherford is not, he's no holds bar, and he'll go for it. Let's see what's up with Malkin. Remember, he didn't play last night. He's not scheduled to play tonight.
Yeah, after his big fight with Stamkos.
Yes, that was a massive brawl, right? I mean, I'm curious to see how Bukestad does there. I'm really curious to see if he, more than just the initial, bump, going to a new team. I'm curious to see how he plays in the playoffs, Judd and Bob and RJ. I'm really curious to see if that, he's only played there a little bit with Florida, doesn't have a lot of experience in that. Will he be able to handle, he's not a physical guy for a big guy, but can he up that level? The McCann part of the trade, they look at him as a bottom six guy, a guy that can help him in many versatile ways. I don't know if I completely agree with that. I think he's an unproven entity still so far. But the Bukestad part of it to me is the real interesting part of it. They get younger. Yes, they take on some contracts, but they're okay with that. They like the term. This is the real hockey trade. And for Florida, they open up a whole boatload of possibilities. It wouldn't shock me if they traded one or both of those guys that they traded for, Broussard and Sheahan, come deadline time if they find themselves, 8 points out. I can't imagine that Florida will make the playoffs, but if they do one of their full runs and they get close, are they going to hold on to guys? If they have no interest in keeping Broussard or Sheahan, I think they'll look to move them and get more assets back too.
Another trade made this week, the Toronto Maple Leafs. We've talked about them a lot, or really over the course of the last two or three years, about how they need upgrades on the defensive end. They pick up Jake Muzzin this week from L.A. in exchange for a first rounder and a couple of prospects. What do you think of the deal, and how much better does he make them defensively?
Well, I like the deal for them because it was so obvious to everybody that they needed a guy just like that. That was a guy that they've been targeting for a while. I like the fact that they went out and did it. Yes, they gave up a first-round pick, but the guy's got a year left on his contract. You're going to have to do that. He's a defenseman. You're going to have to give up a little more. Yes, they gave up prospects. I do not claim to know them. I investigated about them, and I'm told that they're both legitimate NHL player prospects. But, okay, that's still prospects. We don't know if they'll actually end up being that. So I do like the trade. I think it makes sense for both. With regard to how much better does it make them, well, I'm curious to see, because he's not a hard, steadfast right D-man. Morgan Rielly, in fact, has slid over to right to play there the first time, but yet they want him to be on the right D. I think he makes them better. He's a penalty killer. He's a stay-at-home guy. He's got some, edge. Is that fair, guys? I think that, he's got
some offensive side to him, too, though.
And he's got a shot, yeah. No doubt. But more than anything,
he's not an offensive defenseman, but he can put up some points. He's smart enough to do that.
Right. And here's the other thing. It puts Ron Hainsey to a different pair.
Exactly.
Which, that right side, whether it was Hainsey or Zaitsev, was really getting exposed because Hainsey was playing the most minutes on that right side. I think it makes them better, RJ. Just to anoint them Stanley Cup champs, hell no. I don't think it does that for them. But I think it does make them better, and we'll see how much better. I'm not convinced that they're done. I'm not totally convinced that they don't try and make another move and get an actual right shot either.
Blackhawks are reportedly going to ask Duncan Keith if he wants to move by the trade deadline. What do you think of that?
I'm curious. Judd knows Duncan Keith real well from his many years in Chicago. He's a fiercely loyal guy. He's intense. He's an amazing athlete. I believe he signed through his 22-23 season. So he's got
four years left, I think it is, on that deal, yeah.
Right, a very easy number. It's a full no trade, and my understanding is that he is not happy with what's gone on and the direction of the team overall. But that said, is he still going to waive his no movement clause to move elsewhere? What is that situation going to be? It's something that certainly bears watching around the National Hockey League.
Yeah, and I think what it comes down to, I think out of respect to Duncan, and this is just my take, I think if it involves certain type of team where he says, yeah, I'm really comfortable going there, I think he would entertain it. No question about it. I don't think they're going to sell him to a bad team. It doesn't make sense for a bad team to take that on either. It's not like he's, 25 years old. He's in his mid-30s. I still think, though, he'd be a huge addition for a team that is really on the precipice of making a move towards the Stanley Cup between his experience, his conditioning, his attitude, and just, I think a trade might spark him, too. I do. I think it might spark him to get back to a level that he needs to.
His numbers have been down this year. How much of that is about the team around him versus, him at 35?
I think both. I do think both, but I think the beginning of the year was tough. He had a tough start to the year. I do think on a better team, though, used in a different way or a little bit different way, maybe expectational different, I think his numbers would go up, RJ.
I also think, you can't get caught up in the numbers. He is not an offensive defenseman. He's a guy who can't pick up points because he logs a lot of ice time in a lot of key situations. But as far as goals and assists, that's something you can't necessarily focus on with a guy like Duncan Keith. Can he still skate? Can he still use his stick effectively? He's not a really big guy whatsoever.
No.
He's a supremely conditioned athlete, and for years he's been able to use his feet and his ability to transition the puck also with, as a good passer, and that's been a big difference maker for him and for the Blackhawks team. As they won those three Stanley Cups, can he still do that? I think that's a question for other evaluators around the league.
Yeah, I think on the right type of team, again, where, remember, he would log, I mean, what would he log, guys, 28, 32 minutes regularly? Forget the overtime games. I'm talking, you know, 26 to 30 minutes regularly with the Blackhawks in his prime. He's a cardio freak. And Judd talks about his conditioning. He would break the VO2 records on just about every team that he has been on. You know, I think on the right type of team, right situation, he can still help. The question becomes is you're not just getting him for this year. You've got, again, contract through 2023.
The guy that Chicago would love to move is Seabrook.
Well,
that's not going to happen.
We all have
doubtful.
Yeah. Let's finish on the Washington Capitals. Bruins go down there tomorrow afternoon for a matinee performance. Washington finally breaks a seven-game losing streak last night with a win over Calgary. What do we expect out of the Caps, and can the Bruins finally break through against Washington?
Well, a wonderful question, something that we are just, we haven't seen in, 14 games now come through. I do think they can beat them the way that they played them last time. I thought the Bruins were damn good against them. The Capitals were more opportunistic in their scoring. The Caps finally win last night in a pretty fun game over Calgary. They went 0-5-2 in their previous seven games. So here we're talking about a team that needed the break, no doubt about it. They went in limping. They went in very, awful defensive structure. It's like we all of a sudden saw their hockey hangover, the Stanley Cup hangover, come out in the middle of the season. It was a delayed reaction, I guess you would say, to it. Ovechkin did not play last night. He plays against the Bruins tomorrow afternoon. I sure hope the Bruins can win a game. Man, oh, man, I hated the feeling after that game the other night, fellas, in Boston. I just didn't like how that game went. David Krejci, I saw a post-game comment saying, you know, we just didn't do enough. We didn't deserve the win, and it sure felt that way, and I'd like to see that change. This would be a huge opportunity for him to come through, and I look forward to listening to Judd and Beersy. I'll sync it up with my TV so I can listen to them and not others.
Ovi spent some time in the Caribbean this week recharging the battery, so he should be good to go tomorrow.
Yeah, good for him.
Billy, we appreciate the time as always. We'll talk to you next Saturday.
Okay. Be well. Travel safe, Judd and Bob. Okay? Be well.
All right. I will say the same thing. Judd and Bob, noontime pregame, 12:30 face-off tomorrow here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Enjoy the flight down to D.C., and hopefully you get home in time for kickoff tomorrow.
Hopefully.
All right, that'll do it for this edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. We'll talk to you next Saturday. I am back with you as well tomorrow morning from 8 until noon as we get you ready for Super Bowl, 52, 53? Coming up tomorrow here on the Sports Hub. We'll talk to you then.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.